1, 2, 3, 4. Do you hear the people sing? Singing a song of angry men. It is the angry men who refuse to be angry men again. And the angry men in France are the angry men in France. They are the angry men in France, and they will not be mad again. Perfect.
Let's get some room tone. Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. I'm Henry.
And I'm John.
And together we're Henry and or John.
What episode is this?
This is episode... This is eight. Okay.
So how are you today, Henry?
You know, I'm feeling very lethargic.
Lethargic? Why?
Yeah. Well, there's some bullshit at work. I had to end up, like, covering someone's shift when I wasn't supposed to. Mm-hmm. You know, the old rigmarole.
Mm-hmm.
Basically being an everyday work hero and never being thanked about it.
You know, I feel like I have the opposite experience in that I'm an awful employee and I get rewarded for it.
You know, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not really in a job where people would get rewarded for, like, stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's just like, hey, the place didn't burn down. You get to come back tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah.
With going into as few specifics as possible.
Yeah.
What led you to this dire state?
Oh, well, we have about 4 or 5 people who will work the desk of my job. And all that job really is answering the phone and directing people to, like, their appointments and letting other people know that their clients are here. And, the person who opens today, so that means they're supposed to get there 30 minutes before, didn't show up and did not tell anyone that they weren't going to show up.
Just didn't show up at all.
Yeah, and I'm used to doing the opening duties anyway because I do them like twice a week already, so it's like, okay, I'll just do this because maybe they have like another thing they have to do before they get to work. But I expect you to be there on time because I can't work the desk. I'm going to have a client come in and I have a session to do. So it was basically like, and I try to cover for people as much as possible. I don't want to sell people out to be like, yeah, so-and-so didn't get here on time to the boss. That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
But if the boss gets there before you do, I can't cover.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie.
I mean, it sounds like you're a real stand-up citizen at your job.
Yeah, well, again, if you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all. I quoted God from Futurama.
Oh, that is from Futurama.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite, where I'm a complete, like, least amount of effort employee. Like, I do the very least amount of effort to get a good job done.
Yeah.
And then people laud me with praise, because I'm kind of a shitty employee.
So when you do something, you know, just like, modicumly? That's not a word.
Just like with a modicum of...
Modicum.
No, not really. I do a good job, but every time I'm not doing a good job, I'm texting on my phone, making fun of my direct supervisors. Like, I'm not a good employee, but people see me being a good employee, and they're like, oh, that John, he's a real go-getter.
Well, that's... I guess that's lucky. I mean, that's not bad.
I'm just an awful manipulative person.
I mean, who isn't these days? Just look at the media.
Yeah.
They want us to know that... They don't want us to know... That the whales aren't endangered. Wait, I don't know what I'm going with this, sorry.
The whales are endangered. Please save the whales.
Yeah, the media wants you to think they're all up in the blackfish. What am I saying?
What is happening?
I'm having a stroke. What is...
No, I'll riff, okay?
Alright, you riff, hurry. While you riff, I'm gonna drink this glass of water.
Okay, so they're all up in the blackfish, meaning they're, Fuck.
This water sure is saving my brain.
I'm riffing, it's okay. So they're in the... Whales are... Oh, shit.
What it is, yo... Let me school ya. What it is, yo, is that the media doesn't want you to know that whales are smarter than dogs.
I would believe that.
The pro-dog propaganda in this country has just gone off the rails lately with their pandering to dog people.
Do you mean pandering to people who like dogs or pandering to people who are part dog?
You know, I have to question that myself from time to time.
You know, pigs are smarter than dogs and some children.
Most children.
Most children. Pigs are smarter than most children.
You know, with that little factoid, I think we come to a little time-honored segment that I like to call...
What?
Are...
No, I wasn't doing a bit where we say each word.
Oh,
I was just saying what.
Oh, no, it's what are we doing?
Okay.
And to answer that question, I don't know what the past, like, 2 to 5 minutes was.
The past 2 to 5 minutes? I can't remember the last 2 to 5 days.
Wow. You know, come to think of it, I can't either. Were we abducted by aliens?
I think we just drank a lot.
What are we doing? You know, it's not...
Not.
Super Tuesday.
It's not Super Tuesday.
No, why would we do that?
Why would we be upset?
Who's upset?
There's no reason to be upset.
You're right.
It's all fine.
We live in the land of the dreams.
Mm-hmm. We live in some place that is atemporal and not tied to the comings and goings of your mortal world, such as Super Tuesday.
And you know, on that note, I think we can stand to talk about the Oscars.
Oh, right, the Oscars.
The Oscars happened this past Sunday.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of those Oscars?
You know, I think they were poignant, and there was definitely a message throughout, through the comedic stylings of Chris Rock.
Yes, Christopher Rock.
Christopher Rock, yes, and he had a message he wanted to deliver, and it was a very serious one, one that I think... could use a lot of attention, and one that received a lot of backlash.
And I mean, we're talking, of course, about climate change.
Climate change. Thank you. It is real, and we need to do something about it.
Man, that was such a good Chris Rock impression.
Thank you.
So good. I can't believe he opened with that, though.
I mean, well, it's the most important message of the night. Even Leonardo DiCaprio ended his speech with, "Come on, Hollywood, wake up. And hire climate change as actors."
You know, Alexander Iñárritu... wait, Alejandro. I said Alexander.
Yeah.
That's ethnocentric
that
of
is,
me.
That's a really Greek name.
Iñárritu. Anyway, his acceptance speech was all about climate change as well.
Yeah.
Having to travel to the most extreme points to the globe to find snow to film in, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, when you're challenging yourself to shoot in all-natural light, you will run into things where, like, okay, we need snow for this shot, and now this shooting has run into the months we didn't think it would run into, and the snow's melting, so we gotta go way down to South America, where there's snow.
I think almost every person who won a prestigious Oscar, other than Sam Smith, said something about climate change.
If not climate change, a little bit of, what do they call that, campaign financing reform was mentioned, I think, twice.
Yep.
Thank you, the Big Short people.
Thanks, Adam McKay.
Of the Big Short Company.
The Big Short Company. You know, he's a very tall man.
Oh, that's weird. Why would he be in Big Short Company?
Because he's a big short.
Oh, he's a big short.
Yeah, he's big, comma, short.
He's a big short.
He calls people short.
But he's big.
Yeah, he's big, short.
You know, tell people about The Big Short, the actual movie, and not this weird, fantastical, made-up bullshit we're doing right now.
It's a really good movie. It's fantastic. It's based on a book by Michael Lewis. It's about the financial crisis of 2007, 2008, and 2009. Let's call it 7 and 8. It's really... hilarious. The editing is superb. I never would have expected that Adam McKay was capable of producing something that was so visually striking. I think there's one point in the movie where a Run the Jewels song is played atop, I think, a Frank Sinatra song for about 10 seconds. It's fantastic.
That sounds good. That sounds worth checking out. And now, I think it won an Oscar?
It won an Oscar for adapted screenplay.
Okay.
Which, you know, that's the...
That's the nod it could get.
Yeah, it's the most
esoteric category to win.
What's a meaningless award you can receive? It's the Employee of the Month of Oscars.
Well,
no one actually appreciates you.
I did.
When you were Employee of the Month?
Original screenplay and adapted screenplay. I think those are some of the best awards to win.
Yeah, but who cares what writers think? The big money is in the screaming and the crying, in the acting for the little golden man.
But, you know, you never write for a little golden man, so, like, it's one of the most honest awards you can win.
It is, but that's not what people care about.
I don't care what people care about. I'm not here to please people, John. I'm here to hit people in the face with the cold, hard truth.
You know, Alejandro Iñárritu.
Iñárritu?
Iñárritu? No.
Iñárritu?
Macho Burrito? Anyway.
Alejandro Iñárritu.
Yes, he won for Best Director.
He did.
And you could arguably say that a lot of the reason his directorial choices were as striking as they were was because of his cinematographer.
Yeah. I mean, it won Best Cinematography, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, and it deserves it.
It did. But, you know, it's director, actress, and actor that people care about. That's all people care about. That's why those awards are last.
Do people care about picture?
Yes.
Okay.
They absolutely do.
Because this year, Best Picture went to Spotlight.
It did.
Which it made history because no one saw the movie Spotlight.
I don't know a single human being who saw the movie. So I knew what Spotlight was about. I was excited for it. But when the Oscar nominations came out, I was like, what is Spotlight and what is Brooklyn?
Oh, Brooklyn's a city in
it's
New York.
It's also a movie.
Whoa!
About Irish immigrants?
I think it was. From the clips shown during the Oscars, it looked like Irish immigrants.
I know Saoirse Ronan's in it. She's an Irish.
Ronan?
Ronan.
That's a Japanese name.
R-O-N-A-N.
Oh, it's spelled with an A.
No, you're thinking about the Wandering Samurai.
I am. I very much am.
She is also a Wandering Samurai.
Now we've got a movie. An Irish immigrant who is a Wandering Samurai.
Can you get a legal pad to write all this down on? I think we're working on our Best Original Screenplay.
Oh, man, I can't wait. You know who I'm going to thank?
Who?
Our dear listeners of Zero Credits, this podcast.
Ooh, they deserve it.
And if you kickstart our screenplay...
If you GoFund us...
Yeah, GoFundMe.com/kickstart.
Yeah.
Because that's our username on GoFundMe.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get that screenplay, and then if you get the $5 range, you will be mentioned in the little scrolly bar at the bottom of the screen during the Oscars.
And if you contribute at the $10 level, you will be in the movie. We will cast you in the movie.
And for a nickel, we will say your first initial in the speech as one of the words we say.
As part of one of the words.
Yeah,
yes.
As part of one of the words. You know, between you and me, let's not let the listeners know, but at the end of our speech, we could just say, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog, and we will knock out every letter.
I mean, it's a classic Hollywood move to end a speech that way.
Yeah.
So everyone would get it.
You're right. You know, so many other people do it that it wouldn't even stand out.
Yeah.
So, and then, like, it wouldn't even create, like, buzz on social media. They'd be like, oh, yeah, do you know some people want a reward? Oh.
They're like, it's so nice that they're bringing back the classic tradition of saying the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog at the end of their Oscar speech.
Yeah.
Much like Vincent Price did.
Oh. Did he win an Oscar?
No idea.
Oh, that would be really cool.
Don't pay attention to the Oscars.
He was too popular. Popular people don't win Oscars. Let's just look at Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, it took him 30 years to win an Oscar.
How old is Leo?
I don't know.
I'm really excited for Leo's next project.
What is it?
Okay, Martin Scorsese.
All right, I'm excited.
Is directing an adaptation of a book.
You're losing me.
Called The Devil in the White City.
Okay, downward spiral.
Really?
Keep going.
It's about America's first serial killer.
Okay, back up there.
Who didn't write anything?
Is this the Murder Hotel?
Yeah, he made a Murder Hotel for Chicago's World Fair.
Okay, fantastic. I love the Murder Hotel.
I think it's H.H. Auden.
That's one of my favorite pieces of American serial killer ephemera.
I really think it's part of the American myth.
The killer hotel?
No, just serial killers in general.
I mean, we as Americans love serial killers to death.
Kind of. The Zodiac Killer got his own movie.
Yeah.
And now H.H. Auden's coming out right behind him.
I mean, I think a lot of this comes down to people just really enjoying these mythical characters that exist outside of what we consider to be the traditional mode of existence.
Yeah. It's, you know, the spectacle of horror set within the lens of difference.
Mm-hmm. There was a book and then a movie called We Need to Talk About Kevin, which I've only seen the movie, and I do have significant problems with it, but I liked it. And one of the things the character in it... Spoilers for We Need to Talk About Kevin. A character kills people.
What?
Yes.
No way!
A character kills people in that movie.
Is it Kevin?
Oh, I can't say. But he's being interviewed...
By?
That...
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't really... It doesn't come up. He's just on TV.
He's just on TV.
The killer is being interviewed on TV, and he said...
By, like, a news reporter.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he said, you know, the thing is...
By, like, a hot news reporter?
Not really. Like,
she's very attractive?
You never see her... Never.
Oh.
So what Kevin says...
So, like, Scarlett Johansson?
No.
All right. Well, what does Kevin say?
Well, what Kevin says is, you know, I wouldn't be here. I would not be on TV. None of you would be looking at me if I woke up, sat in a Lazy Boy recliner, and watched TV until I died.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot of copycat killers, or people are like, I just want to be famous. Mm-hmm. We'll go out, kill a bunch of people. I mean, and the American culture, the American media eats that stuff up.
Mm-hmm. I think it comes down to, there's this idea of American exceptionalism in politics, where the idea is, Americans think that they're exempt from the rules of the rest of the world. They think that they're exceptional.
All right.
And that they're different. But I think that there's a different myth of American exceptionalism where we idolize and make into myth these people who existed outside of the norm, these exceptional people. We love stories about people who weren't born into anything, and they forged their own destiny as this thing, whether it's for good or ill. We really enjoy people being exceptional, the exception to reality.
It's true. I mean, the American Tall Tale is a genre that exists in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just because I called it the American Tall Tale. I could have just said the Tall Tale, but the Tall Tale doesn't really exist anywhere else.
Not really.
And other people, other cultures told stories about, like, origin, trying to understand the world. We told stories about exceptional people.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Bunyan. Who else?
John Henry.
The guy who became the superhero Steel because he created his own Steel suit in the DC Comics.
What?
What?
You're right.
Also, it was a really terrible movie, I think, starring Shaquille O'Neal.
No, that was the Iron Giant.
Oh, you're right. How could I get, you know, Steel confused with the Iron Giant? Uh-huh.
Wasn't John Henry's thing that he, like, raced a train?
Yeah.
Or...
That's exactly it. The folk tale, the tall tale, is that he raced a machine that could pile drive railroad tracks.
Yeah.
And he ended up beating it because the machine ran out of coal or something, or he was just better.
John Henry never ran out of coal until he died.
That, I mean, truer words.
And then he ran out of life coal.
Life coal from the makers of people.
You know, if you run out of life coal, you turn into a death diamond.
That sounds pretty metal.
I mean, it is the name of my metal band.
Oh, that's where you got the name of your metal band.
Yeah.
This world is rapidly spinning out of control, John.
It really is.
We're grounded and ungrounded at the same time.
Let's bring it back.
All right, we'll bring it back.
Walk it back. So, what have you been watching?
Oh, we're doing your new segment.
Yes.
What have you been watching?
Is that the theme song?
I just wanted to sing.
Okay, let's do it again.
All right, the theme song?
Theme song. What have you been watching? Sorry, I had a scat breakdown.
No, it's fine. I like it.
It was a...
Do it every time.
It was a barely audible scat breakdown.
Do it every time.
Next time, listeners,
All right, so this is a segment where we talk about something we've watched in the past week.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Deadpool.
Now, by watched, I want to be clear.
Oh, yeah, books.
It means you experience something with your eyes.
So literally anything.
So you saw Deadpool.
I saw Deadpool. Starring Ryler.
That's right. Starring Ryan.
He's Canadian, so
yeah,
he pronounces his name Ryer.
Ryan?
Ryle Reynolds. Along with, what's her name? Not Vanessa Hudgens.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Her name's Vanessa in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know what her name is in real life.
Yeah, it's Spanish.
Is it?
I believe.
Okay.
And TJ Miller.
TJ Miller.
And those are all the stars I remember.
I think they're the only ones of note.
And probably. Alright, this isn't giving anything away.
Mm-hmm.
But the opening credits for Deadpool were hilarious.
They're really, really, really fantastic.
And you know, I'm not going to describe them because you just need to go see it, but they were funny.
It's a visually beautiful movie, too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
The holistic approach they have to everything that happens, every moment of action is great.
You're right. And like a cool thing about this superhero movie that not many other superhero movies do is that it was very self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't like, oh yeah, we're going to allude to a past or a present.
Mm-hmm.
They allude to past stuff, but you see it.
I mean, if you compare it to something like The Avengers, it has hundreds in a movie, hundreds of sets,
yeah,
of set pieces of, yeah, locations. You could probably count the number of locations in Deadpool on two hands.
Yeah. I was talking to my girlfriend, who we saw it together in different theaters. But I was talking to her about it after, and she was like, there was basically like three scenes,
mm-hmm,
like a backstory and then two sort of, you know, present scenes.
Yeah.
And I was being a little bit reductive because there are, of course, more connective tissue between,
yeah,
these scenes.
Yeah.
But it's still like there are like two moments in the film that aren't backstory. And then like it just wraps up. It's just like, yeah, that's the story we wanted to tell. And, you know, we didn't waste time and boom, dumb, jam. It's funny.
What I really loved about Deadpool is it was made on a small budget and it was, I think it's quality wise, better than any of the Avengers movies I've seen. The first Avengers movie had heart and was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
I don't shit on that movie as much as I want to. I really liked it.
See, I will put this up there with the first Iron Man movie.
I feel exactly the same way. I think it's, yeah, in the same vein. It was taking chances, which is what made the first Iron Man so good.
Yeah.
You didn't know superhero movies could be this loosely adapted, funny, faithful, really entertaining journey,
yeah,
which Iron Man was. You didn't know they could be that, because the best you had up until that point was the Spider-Man movies, which were god-awful.
Yeah, the Spider-Man movies are just an experiment in how to do something wrong,
yep,
multiple times.
I mean, I love the Spider-Man movies. They're not good.
Yeah. I really like this new sort of faithful to the character, loose with the story sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we just go to the movies to see things we can experience in other media, if we just, like, we're going to see copies of stuff,
mm-hmm,
the fun, you kind of lose out on some of the fun.
Yeah, I feel like having movies be this thing that's it is a story, it is based on something, but it's not that thing. It's not literally the experience you have reading the comic books.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's merit in that, because if that difference allows it to become its own sort of piece.
Mm-hmm. And if I can walk back for a second, when I was talking about how small the budget was,
yeah,
and how I enjoyed it maybe more than any of the Avengers movies, I loved it because it was so small. It knew its scope, it played with that scope really well. Everything had a ton of... There was very little breadth. It wasn't a big, wide movie, but it was very deep.
Yeah.
Every set had, like, character and purpose, and things changed. It knew what it was doing and where it was, instead of feeling like this, you know, Technicolor fever dream that big superhero movies can feel like. It's like, oh, they're in the halls of Valhalla, now they're in a weird frozen forest, now they're in space.
I mean, one of the things about Deadpool is... The whole character feels more slice of life-ish and more realistic than, say, like an alien, a super alien race person, or a person who flies around in a metal suit, or a person who's been frozen for 50 years, or a guy with a bow and arrow. You just can't relate to a guy who just walks around with a bow and arrow.
You can't.
I mean,
that's why The Weatherman isn't a great movie.
And it, to be honest, that's why Avengers 2 is so weak, because Joss Whedon just tries so hard to get you to care about this guy with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
We visit his family for no reason. Yep. I mean, guy with a bow and arrow just needs to go back to the archery range and leave all the superheroes alone.
I mean, I do have a tendency to agree, but I think it's endemic of a larger problem. Is that the correct use of that word?
Endemic?
Yeah.
Is that where you, that's where you don't have enough iron in your blood?
Yes. It's something of a larger problem.
It's anemic of a larger problem.
It's anemic of a larger problem, and that problem is people who put together superhero movies, especially now because superhero movies have such a massive amount of continuity, like in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that they have to double back on.
Yeah.
That we are going to have an Avengers movie in the near future where I don't give a shit about any of the Avengers.
Here's the thing. I read this headline recently.
Mm-hmm.
The Marvel's the Avengers Infinity War is going to feature 68 characters.
Too many.
68 characters.
I can't name that many Marvel people.
I wouldn't want to. 68. You know that's two NFL football teams basically.
Mm-hmm. I just don't understand why we can't have a movie like The Avengers and be why we can't have a movie like The Avengers and essentially have the point being it's not a huge ensemble cast because we made these movies for you to care about these people. And you feel like, you know, because they had their own movies, you feel like the characters who have been given movies in the past are now these, like, just vague lip service things. Like, they'll say the things they're supposed to say. They'll act in this very pastiche way. They're not full characters. But the characters who haven't had feature films, your Hawkeyes and your Hulks, because the Edward Norton movie doesn't count, apparently.
Apparently.
They flesh these characters out more. They try and make them more likable and relatable. So it essentially feels like the movie is about them.
I mean, the writers have to play favorites just because, like, okay, we saw Iron Man. We know who Iron Man is. We saw the others. We know who they are. We got to now introduce these new characters. We got to give them time because, we're going to put them in danger. The audience needs to care for them, so they have to know about them and know them as a person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it becomes, you've highlighted the problem exactly with having that many characters.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to really go about it is sort of, the first Avengers movie, it's kind of like, okay, we went through this weird half of the movie is them sort of getting together, learning each character, and then half the movie is fighting the big threat.
Mm-hmm.
It did it well.
Mm-hmm.
The second Avengers movie was like someone made spaghetti and then poured it onto the salad.
Exactly. It felt like it was trying to serve too many masters because I feel like that first Avengers movie could have been the only Avengers movie.
And probably should have been.
They could have still continued to make movies in this universe about these characters we care about. But I feel like as a movie, that Avengers movie is, like, pitch-perfect for big-budget Marvel movies, but now that we have this, I saw someone on my Facebook feed shared this, and they were excited about it, but it was essentially a Matrix view. Like, it was a Matrix in the mathematical sense. It's like a grid.
Oh, okay.
Of release dates and companies.
Oh, man, yeah.
For comic book movies, not just Marvel, but all of them. And it was, like, 26 movies coming out. And we're reaching this level of peak banality
with
superhero movies where the reason people love Deadpool is Deadpool's small, it's self-contained, it's honest.
And it was unannounced.
Yeah. It didn't have so much going on. It didn't try to shove superhero-dom down your throat. It was a movie about a character who had interests, who existed in this world. They didn't try to serve any masters other than themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, they were very candid about what they were working with, too. You see two X-Men in the film, and they're like, they even point out, what, you couldn't get more? And the honest answer probably is, no, this is who the studio let them have.
Yep.
But hey, they make good use of them.
They make really great use of them.
Yeah.
They managed to make
Negasonic Teenage Warhead a really great character. She exists for like an issue and a half in X-Men.
But she has a really great name.
She has a great name. I love her character in the
movie. Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
It's a song.
That's a song?
It's the title of a song.
From who?
I forget.
Oh. All right. Well, I think we could talk about this stuff forever.
I could talk about Deadpool for 3 hours.
Well, that and all the comic book stuff. We could talk about that forever, but I think we should move on to what did you watch this week?
What did I watch this week? Well, yeah. This is an interesting week to come to me with that question.
Okay.
Because I have not watched a lot.
Oh,
so... I have not been consuming much lately. I've been focusing on, you know, my craft.
Business.
Sure. What did I watch? Let's see.
I'll give you a minute to ponder it.
I've got something I watched.
All right.
Maybe it's not technically within the last week.
We can stretch.
But I have seen it since last we podcasted.
Well, that's a week.
The Witch? Did I talk about The Witch on the last podcast?
Actually, we've never talked about The Witch.
Yes, I saw The Witch.
All right.
Oh, this is a movie heavy.
Oh,
you
yeah.
can tell that we're influenced by those Oscars.
Da na na. Is that the Oscars theme?
Yeah.
The Oscars have a theme.
It is.
All right. Da na na.
Also, Ride of the Valkyries, for some reason.
Everywhere.
Featured very heavily in the Oscars.
The only thing I can figure is that, you know, must have just... Someone discovered a public domain website, and that song kept popping up.
For all I know, it's the standard Oscars walk-off music, but when people were making powerful statements, and then they were playing to walk them off, it just sounded like it was their inspirational music.
Yeah, I mean... You know, they did it so much, and people talk about climate change so much, that I really feel like scientists, when they're doing their reports, need to use Flight of the Valkyries to back up their data.
I can see it.
All right.
So I watched The Witch.
I've also seen The Witch.
The Witch, a New England folk tale. A New England horror story? Whatever the subtitle is.
A New England horror drama.
Horror drama?
No.
Perfect.
That's probably not the subtitle.
But I really enjoyed that very disturbing movie.
You know, it's been a long time since I've seen a real horror film.
Yeah.
You know, not this shock and gore and, you know, this weird grotesque sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But just true, bleak, gut-wrenching, you have to think about it, horror.
Yeah, because horror movies now exist in... three schools or four schools, if you want to think about it. And there's your, you know, there's get asses in seats, jump scares, shock horror.
The PewDiePie of horror.
The PewDiePies, if you will. And then there's the second one, which is the Asian-inspired, creeping psychological horror, which is not terribly well done. You see things in it like, what was that movie about the evil kid?
No, that's all of them. But I would offer The Ring as an example.
Yeah, The Ring was the first one to bring that to the United States, and there's definitely things that feel like that now.
The Grudge.
Yeah.
Insidious? Is that what
Insidious.
Insidious?
Things from Asian horror creep into movies like Insidious.
Okay.
And then you have the third camp, which is these found footage movies, but that's really a sub-camp. I like found footage movies. If they're done exceptionally well, watch VHS... two, and only watch the one that was shot in Singapore.
The VHS movies...
90% bad.
I mean, it's a mixed bag of the four genres that you're listing right now, and, mm-hmm. and most of the time it's just like, what's the simplest idea we can run with? All mm-hmm. right, we got that idea, let's just do it, we'll fix it in post.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So The Witch, I don't think you got to your fourth category.
I forgot what it was.
Alright, well, it's probably zombies.
Probably.
Yeah.
No, monster. It's the grotesquery, like, torture porn kind of thing.
That's not even horror.
It's not. It's just a
porn.
Gross drama.
Yeah, torture porn, this needs to get out.
It does.
Like, Funny Games? No.
Yeah, there are worse ones than Funny Games. Funny Games had a point, but I hate Funny Games. It's one of my least favorite movies, and I hate that movie with every fiber of my being.
All right, so The Witch, a yes. New England nightmare.
A night in England.
A Night in Man Glen, England.
A Night in Man Glen, England.
Here's a thing.
Yes.
Name a star from The Witch.
Shit.
It wasn't a trick question. It was a point I wanted to make.
No, it's very difficult. In that the only person I recognized openly was the father, who's a pretty all over the place British character actor.
Yeah, yeah, he's been in a bunch of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for the most part, it was people who have definitely been in things, but they didn't go after big names.
No, not
which
big
I can respect.
They just got actors who could act their asses off and did a fantastic. There is some of the best child acting I've ever seen in a movie in The Witch.
You will hate these children, but you're supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. You're... Honestly, like, I... It's hard to talk about The Witch and how affecting it is without giving anything away. But yeah. The Witch is an interesting movie because there's nothing to give away.
There really isn't.
I will tell you... And this will improve your watching of the movie, listener, if you do go and watch it. There's no twist.
Yeah.
It's a horror movie with no twist.
Yeah.
Nothing surprises you about this movie, and it's great for it.
You know, in about a year or two, we can talk about this again when everyone has seen it, and we can...
And talk in specifics.
But, I mean, one thing I really like is that this is a period piece that does not flinch away from the period.
Mm-hmm.
There's no... They get everything right. The accents, the day-to-day life, the mechanics of firing a flint and lock, you know, rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is unflinchingly Puritan.
I mean, the director, Robert Eggers... The director and writer, Robert Eggers, said that every single thing he wrote came from diaries, journals, accounts, folklore. He used purely period sources to make the movie.
And because of that, it feels authentic as all get out.
And it was one of the things that got out before the film was released that I really didn't like, was there was this, like, sizzle line quote for it that said... It feels like I'm seeing something I'm not supposed to see. And the other one was, it feels like you're watching a nightmare that has been downloaded from the brain of a Puritan. And those two things are totally accurate, but I hate the way they say it.
Well, you shouldn't say downloaded from the brain of a Puritan.
It's not a good writer who wrote that.
Okay.
But...
I guess it seems like something I'm not supposed to see.
It's very intimate. It's a super intimate movie.
I'm gonna kill this bug.
It's fine.
I'm sorry, folks.
Anyway, it's an extremely intimate movie.
Yeah, man.
Just the character relationships are so close and honest and quiet. It doesn't feel like it's supposed to be a movie.
Yeah.
It feels like essentially someone filmed this awful thing.
It really feels like, to me, to be attempt my hand at being one of those really bad writers, feels like a window out of time.
Yeah, that's a much better way of saying it feels like a dream downloaded from a Puritan's brain.
Well, yeah, because I don't get that quote at all, but it's just like, if there was a way to go back in time and just view things without affecting them, this is that.
Yeah, if it's a... It's a humdinger of a movie.
It is a humdinger.
I
tell you what.
There are four or five scenes in that movie that I might never forget.
There's a lot of implications that I just don't want to work out, but, you know, that doesn't mean I haven't been actively trying to.
I had a very interesting feeling after the movie, which I haven't felt from a horror movie in a long time, and maybe ever, is when we left the movie theater... I made a conscious decision to not think about what I had seen.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to.
To be able to sleep well at night, sometimes you got to push things out of your head.
Mm-hmm.
That movie was one that I pushed out, and then I woke up the next day, I was like, okay, we got to review this, or else we go insane.
Yeah, like when I got home, my house was dark, and I wasn't afraid of anything being in the dark, because that's ridiculous. But I wanted the lights on so that I would have the visual stimuli to not think about things.
Yeah.
I can't... We're doing exactly what I hate about what people did to The Witch, is we're selling it up, we're hyping it up, we're saying it's this big scary thing, and people are going to see it, and they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it sounds like we're being hyperbolic.
And, you know, so let's just say it was okay.
It was a really good movie. You should see it.
It was okay.
How crazy is it that the two movies we're talking about, two of the best movies I've seen in some time, directed by people who had never directed anything before?
That is something surprising and shocking, and it's something I hope that the big studios start to take note of. Give chances to people who haven't had chances.
I mean, I think if there was enough publication of the fact that these two movies existed, we could be talking about... I mean, it's been broken up more and more, but we could be talking about a new branch of the auteur movement. You know, these directors who have very singular visions, but they have no credentials.
Yeah.
You know, like your Stanley Kubrick's Once Upon a Time.
Or your Woody Allen's.
Yeah.
He just made movies about his life.
Yep.
And eventually his life became a character.
So I really hope that Tim Miller, by the way, directed Deadpool. He has never directed a feature-length picture. He was an animator.
Yeah, he animated the test footage that got leaked at the Comic-Con that sparked the interest to get the movie made.
Mm-hmm.
Leaked was in quotes, air quotes.
And I think, backtracking by like 20 minutes.
Okay.
I do think that this holistic nature of Deadpool we talked about is because he's an animator. Animators are very, very detail-oriented.
Oh, yes.
So I can imagine that he had a hand in essentially everything that happened in the movie to a very intimate degree.
And, you know, maybe we... I just want Hollywood to kind of wake up a little bit.
Wake up, Hollywood. Climate change is real.
Put down the Jon Favreau's and pick up what was his name?
Tim Miller.
Pick up the Tim Miller's.
Wait, Tim Miller? T.J. Miller?
Oh no, conspiracy, it's nepotism.
No.
Corruption. Corruption, I say. Harump, 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 harump.
I'm going to make sure this guy's name is Tim Miller.
All right, let's check that out. Because I almost did say TJ Miller for the director, and I knew that was wrong. Because it's Officer TJ Hooker. That was a reference to a Will Shatner character from a television show before Star Trek. He played a cop. And I don't remember the name of the show. All I'm trying to say is, if you have a chance, watch Get Smart, which was one of the first Mel Brooks television shows out there. Not Mel Brooks. No, Mel Brooks. Yeah, Mel Brooks. The comedy guy, Mel Brooks. I get him and Gibson confused because their both name is Mel. But yeah, Get Smart, really funny. Not the Steve Carell movie. Skip that. But the original TV show, Get Smart, give it a watch.
Tim Miller.
Tim Miller is his name, folks. You heard it here. Not first. You probably heard that elsewhere.
Yeah, you probably heard that interesting factoid elsewhere.
You've heard it here corroborated first.
Indeed.
Yeah, that sentence was... Are you going to silence us for a second? We'll be back after a brief message from our sponsors. God, this bug... Calm the fuck down, guy!
Hi there! Would you like your ad to be in this perfectly blocked out 30 seconds of space in our highly popular and influential podcast?
If you answered yes, boy do we have a deal for you!
You can sponsor our podcast for the low, low price of pretty much whatever you'll give us.
Seriously, name a figure, we'll say yes, and then you can have us plug your product!
Listen to this professional voice, this gravitas, this intensity, yet honesty.
You can expect similar quality when you hand over your cash to us.
Just give us copy and we'll read it. We don't much care what it is so long as you give us that money.
We'll sponsor the Soviet Union. We don't care.
It doesn't exist. You can pay us to advertise things that don't exist.
Or you could get us to say funny things or silly things like, "Oh, John, you silly Billy."
We could say things like that, or we could say serious things like, "Henry, stop. Stop it. Henry, stop it. Stop." And many more.
John. 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 John, are you okay? Are you mad at me, John? That was really... Oh, God.
Leave your offers in the comments section below.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba! We could do jingles.
Also email us at zerocredits at
Gmail?
Gmail.com.
Yeah.
Let's figure that one out.
Give that a two-day, a hard two-day pause before you do any...
Don't send anything to that email address yet.
Or a week. Give us a week.
Yeah, give us a week. We'll get that sorted out.
Thanks!
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 Thanks.
You know how I snap.
Wait, what are we doing?
I snap by thinking that I'm at a magician show.
Oh, you know how I snap? With the confidence of a crisp Coca-Cola.
What the fuck are we doing?
Hi, John.
What's up?
You know, I was just wondering, how are you feeling today?
You know, I'm feeling a little, what's the word? Lethargic.
Oh.
But other than that, I'm good. Life is moving in a positive direction.
Well, that's good.
I'm honing the aforementioned craft.
Business.
And I, will make money doing something that I enjoy maybe one day.
You know, making money is all that matters.
Is it? I thought it was about doing things you were passionate about and being happy.
Well, what if you're passionate about making money?
I mean, that's what I am.
That's also likewise for me.
Nice.
I mean, when we matched each other on findapodcasthost.com...
Yes.
I picked you because your interest was making that moolah.
Oh, I picked you because you were the correct ethnicity.
What?
That's an OKCupid joke.
Oh, really?
People on OKCupid are hilariously racist.
Wait, is this a true thing?
Yeah, the thing about OKCupid that's pretty cool is they release all of their statistics data anonymously.
Yeah?
So people can then use that data to figure out what people's dating habits are like in aggregate. And something ridiculous like 97% of people say they would only date someone who is the same ethnicity as them.
Wow.
Yeah?
That is a staggering number for the year 2016.
This was a while ago.
Alright, well... Okay.
Back in the racist days of 2013.
Yes, let's just forget those days because of how racist they
were. Let's never go back.
That's just... That, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. Because I guess they gave that information... Did they know
that... Do they know who said it? What...
When they answer these questions,
mm-hmm.
did they know that it was going to be, like, collected, I guess?
I think there's probably, like, an end-user license agreement that no one reads.
Oh, probably. Yeah. These answers can make you look like a total jerk on national television. If you're embarrassed, there's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. Also, all hail Lucifer. Your soul now belongs to us.
That's in line with every OKCupid experience I've ever had.
Yeah. I've never had an online dating experience,
mm-hmm.
but I did write about one back in middle school.
Nice.
It was a short fiction piece called My Date with a Dragon, and it was so realistic that my teacher took me aside and asked that if I had done any like online dating before,
mm-hmm.
and warned me about the dangers of doing that.
Oh.
And I looked at her and said, "Lady, I wrote a story about this guy who goes on a blind date with a dragon... And you think I've actually had online dating experience?"
See, I thought your tack was going to be very different. I thought it'd be, "I wrote a story about a man who went on a date with a dragon. You think I don't understand the dangers?"
You know, if I was punchier, if I was wittier, that's where I would go.
I mean, in middle school, who can say they'd be that way?
I've never been. I was a very defensive child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people are always questioning me.
Yeah.
I hate questions.
Oh.
About me.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me questions about myself.
That's okay.
If I'm on a talk show, we better be talking about something else.
I love questions about myself.
Oh, John. Fine. How gratuitous is your parentage?
Gratuitous?
I don't know what that means.
Hmm. Probably pretty gratuitous.
Wow.
No, I mean, I have a lot of parentage.
Okay, that's good.
Line goes back all the way to the ancient times, back to Charlemagne.
A lot of peoples do, it turns out.
Everyone is related to Charlemagne.
Or Genghis Kong.
Genghis Kong?
That's not a real person, is it?
No, that's Donkey Kong and Genghis Khan combined.
Genghis Khan.
Okay, I thought you said Genghis Kong.
I might have. You'll hear in the playback.
We'll see.
You know, Genghis Kong.
You know, Genghis Kong.
The giant tie-wearing ape that conquered Asia. using mounted bow and arrow warriors.
And then the Pope tries to climb up the little girders, and he just keeps throwing barrels of horses at him.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. This is history.
Wish I was better at history. I love it, but I'm not good at it.
Oh, well, see, here's the secret. If you get the hammer, you can smash the barrels of horses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never knew that.
That's how you win history, basically.
And then Genghis Khan has an aneurysm when you hit him with the hammer.
Well, I mean, it's graphic, but yes.
Was it Attila the Hunter Genghis Khan that had an aneurysm?
Both, maybe.
That seems like a hell of a coincidence.
I mean, maybe it was not an aneurysm, but a person who traveled back in time with a gun that shoots aneurysms.
Like in Videodrome.
Or... I've never seen Videodrome, sorry.
You should, it's pretty good.
I saw Existence.
Eh, not good. Not as good.
Biogun.
Yeah, there's also a Biogun. But that's Videodrome 2, I think.
Sure.
No, Videodrome, whatever.
You know, Cronenberg.
We talk about a lot of movies here.
Let's switch it up.
Let's talk about a different thing.
Speaking of questions. John might have prepared some questions for us.
You know, John didn't, but John can, so something that I was thinking that we could do, because we do have zero credentials.
That's our names.
So we could answer certain existential questions that have been posed by the internet.
You know, the internet is my favorite place to go to get an existential question.
It's really the only place one can get a true existential question.
Like, why is there bacon in the soap?
Is there?
I don't know. That might have been a reference. That might have been a reference to Invader Zim, a cartoon on Nickelodeon.
I may be on a Tumblr, which I'm sorry.
You know, let's just let this happen and see where it goes.
I am rapidly Googling existential questions.
On Tumblr?
And now I'm on Reddit.
Wait, I'm confused. I thought you were going to read questions off of... We didn't plan this.
We didn't. Okay, wait.
I'll fill the time. So back in 1998, I discovered a little thing called Pokemon. And Pokemon just celebrated its 20th anniversary over in Japan. That was the original release date of Pocket Monster Red and Green. And my first Pokemon game was Red. And I picked Squirtle. It was a good time.
So I couldn't find anything.
Okay.
But I will confront you with the greatest philosophical question of all time. All
right.
Posed by every philosopher.
Yes.
And Albert Camus, in his book, Myth of Sisyphus.
All right.
He said that the fundamental question of philosophy is suicide. Why? No. It's not actually bleak. So, people can interpret it as bleak, but it's the idea that why do we exist at all? Like, why would we continue to exist philosophically? Like, that's the existential question. Like, what do we want to feel fulfilled in? Like, why do we want to be here?
Okay.
And you could say that the answer is this, like, really bleak, oh, we're here because we have some natural programming to want to stay alive. Or you could do what Camus said, and you could say that the reason we want to exist is to enjoy life. What is the purpose of existence? It is to enjoy and experience life.
Coming from an angle of no at all knowledge of whatever the hell you're trying to say, and I mean that in the politest way possible, the reason that I think we exist is to enjoy life. Like that Ramu guy. That Rumaru guy.
Perfect.
The thing is, it's like, okay, nobody asks to be born.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody...
No one exists on purpose.
Nobody exists on purpose. Thank you, Rick and Morty.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really good sentiment. And so, the entirety of all life is sort of just making the best of a bad situation. The bad situation being we're alive.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a negative way, but just in the analogy way.
I mean, if we're accepting that for the most part something unfortunate is just something that's unplanned.
Yeah.
And changes your current mode of existence.
Yeah.
Life is the most unfortunate thing.
Yeah.
Because you can't have planned for it. It just kind of happened. And it's kind of the biggest deal.
The weird thing is, parents can plan to have a child.
Mm.
The child cannot plan to be born to those parents.
Yeah.
It's a little unfair.
Mm.
Because when you bring a child into the world, you're asking that child to go through everything that you went through.
Yeah.
And with, like, it's like, okay, if I ever have a child,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to sneak away from, like, my wife and I's bed and just go to that child at night, it's midnight, and hold it and just, like, say, like, here's what's going to happen
mm-hmm.
for the next 40 or 50 years of your life. And then just punctuate with that, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then put that child back and then go back and continue to live my ordinary life mm-hmm. with no money.
I mean, that's the truest sentiment you can say to a kid. It's like, listen, you exist because we wanted you to have this thing we had. But if we're being honest, it's going to, 95% of the time, it's going to be suboptimal. It's not what you want. Life is pain, but it's worth having.
We live in a world where you can see all the things you want, and you can know that there is a reality where that is possible to get all the things that you want. But then you have to wake up from that reality and know that you probably won't get most of the things that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to live with that.
I feel like that's actually a sentiment that most people oversimplify as... I know it got oversimplified in the 90s, early 2000s, as being something that goth people would say. But life is pain.
Yeah.
Existence hurts.
It does. I mean, when you compare it to non-existence, yeah.
Yeah, no. Like, those are the two states of being. One of them hurts a hell of a lot more than the other one does. It's worth having.
Definitely.
Because the greatest thing about life is that it's like this cavalcade of pain. Because it's, you know, if you sat with a kid and you're like, this is every single thing you're going to experience, there's no way they'd take that bet.
No, no. If you sat down with them before they were born and be like, all right, now that I've explained to you the list of things you're going to go through,
mm-hmm.
They would be like, "What? Why? Why are you forcing me to do this?"
I forget, a philosopher did actually say this, the idea that if you could take the consciousness of a fully grown human being without any of the life experience but allowed it to communicate, and you could pluck that out of the ether and have a conversation with it and tell it everything that would happen to it, there's no way it would take the bet to be alive. It would be like, why would I do that? That's crazy. Non-existence is sweet by comparison.
I mean, it's like, I don't want to walk around the woods with a lantern and a hatchet. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Let me go back to where I was, which mm-hmm. is nowhere.
It's, what was I going to say?
You're going to say, Henry, that was the best thing you've ever said. I'm never going to say another word because you already said it.
Truth.
I'm kidding. I'll fill the time. So I picked Squirtle, and then I caught a Pidgey. And a Pidgey's like a small bird. And I was like, this is dumb. Why would I have a bird?
So speaking of Squirtles and Pidgeys.
Oh, okay.
There's this idea about... it's actually the foundations of existentialism. The idea that existentialism is born out of this feeling of forlornness.
Yeah.
Because you're thrust into the world, and when you're thrust into the world, you have no masters. Like, you're not thrust into the world with this idea of a command structure that you have to follow. You don't have order or rules. You just have a million stimuli coming in constantly, and... Some people say, oh, babies cry because they're so sensitive. And that's probably true.
Yeah.
But I think babies cry because being alive is terrifying. Well, you have... Everything is crashing down on you all at once.
Thanks, gravity.
It's, you know, you have these weird other big apes who are talking at you and you don't understand. You have to understand that they're like the kings. And you do what they say. And this is hard and that's soft and things fall down. And what's food?
Yeah.
Life is... terrifying.
And then you age 18 years, you find out the kings were all, you know, winging it. They weren't following any structure, even though they seemed like they were.
Mm-hmm.
And then you age another 10 years, and then you find out the structure sort of is real, it's just it's self-imposed.
Mm-hmm.
The kings were masters of their own self-imposed structure. Now, you have to, like, fall in line, but you want to do this other thing that doesn't fall into your self-imposed structure. Then you age 10 years and you find out you've been put into a structure without you knowing you were. You're a wage slave at a cubicle job, and, you know, you liked it at first because you could finally afford to do some of the things you want. You don't have enough energy or time to do those things anymore, but you at least can afford them if you wanted to. Then you age 10 years, and then it's just like, man, my life was really... What happened to it?
I mean, but that's the bleak example.
I mean,
it's the typical bleak example that's very easy to put this point on, to, like, animize in that way.
Yeah.
But you also have the existence of, you know, these awful stimuli constantly happening, but you find a thing you're passionate about, you create these pockets of light in your life, and you make good things happen, and life is... I saw an illustration of this on a Tumblr, of all things, and I don't like Tumblrs. They're fine, they're just artistic expression
of
aesthetic curation, whatever.
Everyone's too young.
It's true.
Get off my internet lawn.
But I saw this illustration of basically existence is just this series of islands floating in space.
Okay.
That you just build these islands around yourself, and then you move on to the next one and build a new station there. Then you look back in the other one and you're like, man, that island was small and weird. How did that make any sense?
Yeah. Okay. I can get behind that.
You know,
in between all the 10 years or pockets of those islands.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to make it super bleak. It's just like...
But no, that is the easy one to talk about, because that is the typical life one imagines someone having.
It's the SpongeBob joke where the guy is a fish man, and he's at work with like a half his eyes open, and then he's at home, and then he's in bed, and then he goes to work, and then he's in the car, and it's like just repeat, repeat, repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I mean, the end of the adult joke is he shoots himself, but
whoa,
the end of the SpongeBob joke was just, I don't remember because I don't really watch SpongeBob.
Yeah, yeah. Fair. But it's the forlornment I was talking about is the idea that, like, when you, because everyone has the ability to see beyond these command structures and be like, outside of this thing that I'm obeying right now, there's nothing telling me what to do. There's no purpose. But life is worth living, fundamentally.
Yeah, it is. I'm not trying to be down on life. Yeah.
If you asked me when I was essence in the void if I wanted to do life, I'd be like, no, you're crazy. If you asked me today if I wanted to do life, I'd be like, yeah, duh. Life rules. It sucks and it's great.
Because, you know, the thing about telling the child everything it's going to go through, we tend to remember the bad.
Yeah.
So get those out the way first, but then say, but wait, there's pizza.
Yeah.
And then the baby's like, oh, I want pizza. Everybody likes pizza.
There's heartbreak, there's misery, there's sickness and sadness and death, there's bad music, there's rainy days. Sometimes the sun doesn't even come out at all. Sometimes the air is weird and hot and wet and it feels like you're breathing soup. You're never going to have enough money. You're never going to be satisfied in a relationship, but there's pizza. At the end of the day, there's pizza.
At the end of the day, there's pizza.
You know, we do remember the bad. And I think that's because of what we were talking about earlier. The good things in life are like light technicians.
Nobody notices them?
No one notices.
The light technician.
If the job is done right,
nobody knows you've done anything at all. Wow.
Yeah. When your life goes right, you don't remember it.
Yeah. That feels poignant, and you know?
That feels poignant enough
to
end
this
episode.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. We do jingles.
Zero credits.
Alright, so what a rousing episode of that there Zero Credits.
What an interesting ride it was.
We had ups.
We had a lot of downs.
And, yeah, those are the two directions.
Then we had another up there in the middle when we talked about Deadpool.
That was fun.
And then it kind of seesawed, and then we ended on an up.
So, you know, that's another one in the books.
Like, comment, and subscribe.
Tell your friends. I think at this point, telling your friends to also listen is more important than maybe like, comment. Just spread the word. Spread the word any way you can.
Word of mouth is the most important tool.
Get a tattoo.
Yeah, get a Zero Credits tattoo.
Take a risk, you know. Before you bungee jump, tell them, Zero Credits told me to bungee jump.
Yeah.
And then, you know, jump.
The fundamental question of philosophy is why we don't bungee jump.
And also, the fundamental question of philosophy is listen to Zero Credits.
Listen to Zero Credits.
and we will take care of you.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
And at the end, there will always be peace.
Bye.